Welcome to Care to Lead, your path to leadership success. Brought to you by the Vizient Nurse Executives Network.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Barbara Seymour, Associate Vice President of Member Connections at Vizient. And today's guest is Dr. Perry Gee, a nurse scientist at Intermountain Health. Dr. Gee has been a registered nurse for over 35 years and a clinical informatics specialist for the past two decades. He has a PhD in nursing science and healthcare leadership from the University of California, Davis, an MSN in clinical informatics from the University of Utah, and a BSN from Montana State University. Dr. Gee is the first nurse scientist for Intermountain Health in Salt Lake City and is currently on faculty at the University of Utah and the University of California. Welcome, Dr. Gee.
Please call me Perry.
Thank you, Perry. I'd like to start by having you tell our listeners about your role as a nurse scientist, which may be a new concept or role description for some.
Great. Thank you. I have been a nurse scientist for 8 years now. And when I first took the role, I had no idea what the job was. I tell people I am the biggest cheerleader for nursing research. I spend most of my day promoting research in ambulatory settings, hospital settings, at the bedside, and I conduct my own research myself. I facilitate nursing research fellowships. And then most importantly, I do an academic practice partnership where I facilitate practice partners coming from the universities that may want to do research at our facilities. I can't be an expert at everything. I go to those academic partners and I find experts where I need help in pediatrics or geriatrics or ambulatory services. Honestly, I have the best job possible.
Wow, that's a really cool role because that research is how we create a foundation for evidence-based practice. I'm curious to hear how your background in clinical informatics led you to this role in research, particularly around staff well-being. Tell us how your path led you to that current focus.
It was the last area I thought I would be focusing on. I've been in informatics for years. When I was hired as a nurse scientist for a large health system out in the West, my assumption was I was going to be doing research around consumer health informatics because I had a lot of interest in that area. My chief nurse called me into the office one day and said to me, Perry, I'd like you to do research in human kindness and human compassion. And to be honest with you, I was a little bit startled at first. I didn't know what to expect. I certainly did not know that literature or research in those areas. I wasn't even sure that it was a scientific area that we could be looking at. So it was really a concern of mine. After immersing myself for several years in the literature in both human kindness, compassion, burnout, resilience, well-being, I realized this is a strong area of science, an area that's been studied very well. And I had the opportunity to spend some time with the folks at Stanford who focus on research in human compassion. I learned a lot from them. And here I am 8 or 9 years later, and I consider myself an expert in this space only because I've studied this literature and had the opportunity to do some research and intervention work myself.
I've read some of your work. You mentioned burnout, and you've written about disillusionment, which you describe as a deeper understanding of mediators of burnout. Tell us about the nuances that you describe in that work and how nurse leaders can positively influence those mediators.
I've been very concerned over the last few years that we use the term burnout all of the time. We say the nurses, the doctors, or the therapists are burned out. Burnout has sort of become a catch-all phrase. Would be very much like if we said, your patients are sick. Well, of course, our patients are sick, but we're going to treat them all differently based on their diagnosis. There are instances where people are burned out, and burnout is a workplace condition. There are other things that influence that, but if you weren't at work, you probably wouldn't be burned out. And burnout is an area where we as leaders can step in. This is where we can make a difference. I'm going to implement a program of professional governance, or I'm going to implement Magnet, or I'm going to help streamline the electronic health record. All those things we can do as leaders to help with burnout. Sometimes lumped under burnout are things that are really out of our control as leaders. Things like moral distress, where we know the right thing to do, but we can't always do that as a nurse. Nurses face moral distress every single day. It could be maybe this person doesn't have insurance, or maybe we can't have visitors for this person. Usually we get past those. The situation ends, we move on. But many times moral distress stays. We have moral distress day after day after day, and that can then turn into moral injury. When one has moral injury, that is really similar to PTSD. It's a very serious condition that we need to deal with. When our soldiers come back sometimes from war, they're dealing with moral injury. This is something we can do as leaders. So if I recognize that a nurse is having moral distress, I can pull that nurse aside and talk to them about it. Encourage them to go to EAP. Talk to a chaplain about it. Maybe it's something big enough that we take to an ethics committee. Those are different things that we can do for moral distress. That's different than burnout. Also different than burnout is compassion fatigue. We work all day, every day, pouring out compassion to our patients and families and loved ones. The compassion that we give is to our fellow nurses and other caregivers. We go home, get a good night's rest, come back to work, and that compassion fatigue is gone, and we build it over again. There are times when that compassion fatigue builds up over and over. We've worked so hard. So many things are happening in our lives, and it's become difficult. This is something that we can measure. There's scientific instruments to measure compassion fatigue and compassion satisfaction. Compassion satisfaction helps us to combat compassion fatigue. Compassion satisfaction is that feeling you get when you're helping someone, when you're teaching, when you're spending time with someone. We all know as nurses what that feeling is like. When we help someone, we honestly know they're better because of the work that we're doing. That is compassion satisfaction, and it combats compassion fatigue. If we as nurse leaders observe nurses that have compassion fatigue and they do not appear to be getting compassion satisfaction somehow, this is where we could step and try to figure out how to help that. Maybe we talk it over as a team. What's getting in the way from you having compassion satisfaction? Maybe it's the way that we're staffing in the unit. Maybe I just have too many admits today and I don't get a chance to feel that satisfaction. Whatever those things are, this is where we can deal with that. The other thing that we face every day as nurses is secondary trauma. Secondary trauma is where we experience the pain and suffering of other people. It's one of those things that typically we could talk about it after the case. We experienced a difficult code or a difficult patient fall or some other unusual event. We could talk about it. Maybe we could have EAP do a post-event debriefing. There are ways that we can deal with secondary trauma. And then, of course, stress. We all face stress every day. We're working on a program right now at Intermountain Health to help nurses with their daily stressors. This is why when I say it's not just burnout, there's a lot of other conditions that we need to consider as nurse leaders and then focus on what is really impacting our nurses.
Wow, that's really fantastic information. I do want to hear more about what you described around stress first aid. Tell us a little more about stress first aid and how it helps staff and leaders and their well-being.
Stress first aid is something that we're really excited about right now. And the reason we're excited about it is because I see nurses excited about it. Stress first aid came from the National Center for PTSD. And really, it's just a simple way for us to talk about the way we're feeling. We use a color-coded stress continuum. And if a nurse is in the green zone, that means they have low stress. If they're in yellow, they have that stress that you would have at work. Almost everybody has yellow stress at work during the daytime, where we have admits, or we have a difficult family member, or we have a difficult order that we're dealing with. If we're in the orange, it's more than difficult. It's stress that has accumulated over time. It's very difficult. And this is where we may need to pull the nurse or the other caregiver out of that situation. If I'm in a red stress level, that's an emergent need. This is where somebody needs immediate professional help. This continuum is something that we studied with our peers at MedStar Health out in Maryland and Washington, D.C. They shared their model with us. We brought their model back to Intermountain Health. We're implementing it across our 9 states and among our 16,000 professional registered nurses. That's a big challenge. And one of our other challenges that we face is that we are focusing not only on our acute care environment, we're focusing on our ambulatory care environments. Right now, we are getting ready to implement stress first aid in the Colorado and Montana states. We have 150 clinics that we're going to be implementing stress first aid in those clinics. We're trying to train a champion in every single one of those clinics so that they are all prepared to use this simple tool to get people talking about their stress. And then one last thing, and this is the key, We want people to know how to check on one another and how to coordinate the care. If I am a nurse and I identify a person who is struggling with stress, I could call my nurse manager. I can get them in touch with EAP. I can get them in touch with peer support. I recognize that there's a problem, and then I know how to coordinate the care for that person.
To think about spreading that across almost 20,000 people in an organization, that's a really big lift. Stress first aid is just one component of the work you're doing at Intermountain. Tell us more about the development of your nurse enterprise well-being team at Intermountain Health.
When our new chief nursing officer came, her very first act as an enterprise officer was, let's develop a team, an enterprise nurse well-being team. And that team is made up of members from each of our three large regions. We all came together, trained at MedStart, became certified in stress first aid, and we came back and started implementing that program across our regions. We have a strategic plan where we're talking about how are we going to do measures around this? What are we going to do as our next steps after stress first aid? How are we going to ensure that our programs are sustainable? Those are the things that this enterprise team does, and then we report back to the chief nursing officer at least on a monthly basis. That is the first thing she asks me every time she sees me is, how is the well-being of our nurses? What is your team doing right now?
That's a really powerful statement from a new chief nurse executive. And what an amazing body of work you're doing. It's just been a pleasure having you as our guest today, Perry. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed today's discussion, please subscribe to hear more Care to Lead podcasts. Like us and send us your comments. Care to Lead is your path to success and is brought to you by the Vizient Nurse Executives Network. I'm Barbara Seymour. Have a great day.